Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Pastaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamine Tanamane. Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pitsarane, Nivasesha Sanyavadi, Puskati De Sitarane. Om Aginatiminandasya, Jana Jana Salakaya, Saksu Samilatan Jena, Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sa Pandantikam. Vansakalpa Trubascha Kripasindubayabacha Patitanam Pabinebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Hare Krishna. Thank you for coming. We've had three classes in this seminar, and each has been at a different time. And somehow or another, you all came anyway. Now, how many of you have attended the first two classes?
No. Why?
No time. Okay, you all, both two. Yes, sir. No? Oh. Okay. Now, who remembers something from the last class? Raise your hand, please. Yes. Yes. What is your name? Excuse me? Looks like a long
Hare Krishna.
Question.
In last class, we the sadhus, the bhakti Vedanti sadhus left after the four chaturmas, and Narad Muni wanted to go along with them, but her mother's love, affection, her need bound him, and he could not go. And after the sadhu's departure, after some time, one day her mother was going to milk the cows in the night, and she was bitten by a serpent and she died. And Narad Muni saw this from the second truth, from the lens of the second truth, that and he that their Lord Krishna, Lord
what
Krishna
was that second truth?
Life's difficulties should be seen, should be understood, should be viewed through the lens of transcendental knowledge. And Narad Muni understood and knew that there is always Krishna's mercy is there, and there is no wrong with this. And he took this opportunity, and after this he left his home and he headed towards north, while and his journey in his journey to north, he passed through many pleasant places, villages, cities, also the unpleasant places, thorny lands and darkness, forest
dangerous
full of
places. This is like our life, parts of our life. If we are fortunate, there are pleasant parts, and then there are parts that are dangerous, frightening, painful, very unpleasant. And at the end of our life even, it must be unpleasant because the soul is going to leave the body. So what to do as we go through life? Narada Muni is modeling the ideal. And the last point, yeah, keep going.
And then while passing towards north, he reached a lake and he was thirsty and tired, and he drank water from lake and sat down under a peepal tree, and he meditated within his heart on the form of Lord. And suddenly Lord appeared in his personal form within his heart, and after some, and Lord Narad Muni was completely absorbed in the Lord's form, and suddenly Lord disappeared, and Lord Narad Muni just jumped up and looked for the Lord everywhere, and he could not find. And there was a divine voice, and the divine voice said three verses. First verse was, you will not be able to achieve me in this life because you are not mature enough. The second verse was,
You will not see me again. Because to actually be in Krishna's presence, it takes a certain exalted consciousness, fully exalted. And because we may not have that exalted consciousness yet, then sometimes we can see the Lord, we can perceive His presence in the deity, in the holy name, in the Dham, in the association of devotees, and in the Bhagavatam. But then sometimes we're just in the land of our mind, and Krishna's not there at all. This is due to impurities in the heart and lack of love for Krishna. So then the Lord said that I've appeared to you this one time. I've given you a gift, a special gift. And the purpose of this gift of seeing me one time, of our, we could say, even our spiritual experiences, is I want you to hanker, desire for that more and more and more. We shouldn't run from our spiritual experiences. We shouldn't run in the opposite direction. We should run towards them. And then, what happened next?
That was the second verse of Lord, that divine voice. And the third was,
you'll have the memory of me.
Yeah, you will have the
what
memory.
What you gain spiritually is yours eternally. It's yours forever. But whatever we gain on the material level, in time we will certainly lose. But our spiritual gains are ours forever. They're actually ours. Is something like if you go into someone's house and you pick up, they have a piece of gold there and you pick it up. But it's their gold. So what's the proof that it's their gold? You have to leave it behind when you leave. That means it's not yours. Everything that you brought in, you take with you. But if you can pick up something, play with it, admire it, while you're there, but then it's time to go. You have to leave it behind, because in fact it wasn't yours. So similarly, the things of this world that aren't ours, we have to leave behind. But whatever spiritual improvement we make in this life, we take that with us, and we begin again in our next life. From that point, that is the general principle. Continue. So that was the third verse. So Narada Muni was told by the Lord that you'll remember me even after everything is finished.
And then Narada Muni wandered all over the earth, singing, chanting, glorifying Lord.
Why? Because he had that taste. And he didn't want to taste the pleasures of the material world anymore. He had that desire, that hankering. And then because he was cultivating By always chanting, by always keeping himself in the presence of the Lord, he was cultivating his spiritual life. That means his spiritual identity. And he didn't care where he was, who he was with. He just chanted and glorified the Lord. And then one day, his gross body, khatam ho gaya. And then, because he had cultivated his spiritual life, his spiritual identity immediately was there. Just like what was the example given? Like lightning and illumination appear simultaneously at exactly the same time. So he actually didn't die. He lived. Wonderful story. His death wasn't the cause of his life. Wasn't the end of his life. It was the beginning of his onward journey into this to spiritual service. So we learned through the ideal life of Sri Narada Muni exactly what to do. But unfortunately, what happens to some of us? Of course, not any of you, but some of us, like me, were not able to be as exalted, as great as Narada Muni is. We fall short. We may even very sincerely try, but we don't come up to that standard of such sincerity that Krishna himself manifests himself in our consciousness. Fully, sakshat darsa. So we don't get to that level, and therefore we don't get to the level of the constant chanting of the holy names. So what happens if we try? What happens if we spend time serving? But our service isn't perfect. Because when we hear this story, some of us, when we hear the ideal, something so exalted, someone so exalted as Narada Muni, we become very enlivened. But some of us become sad hearing the same story because we think, I can never do that. And some of us say, from now on, I'm going to be just like Narada Muni, and I'm only going to chant, and I'm always going to chant perfectly and listen to every Maha mantra that I chant from now on until the japa period begins the next day. And after 10 minutes, they may fall asleep. So what happens to those who sincerely try their best, but there may be some imperfection there? I would like to tell you, now this, because sometimes you, when one goes, when, because I travel a little bit, and you go to a temple, and there's issues going on in a temple. And you're not really aware of the issues, and you may say something that sounds like you're taking one side or another in the issue, but, but in this, there's nothing like that going on. I just wanted to tell you a story, I would call it even a pastime, of someone that I participated in. And this very exalted devotee was in the kind of circumstance that teaches us this kind of a lesson of what happens if there's some imperfection and yet one has tried one's best. How does Krishna deal with such a person? So, this person, I will introduce to you now when I first met him, because when I went to the university, State University of New York in Buffalo. Now, they also used to call it Buffalo University. Now, what do you think we learned in Buffalo University? I studied philosophy, but But really, what do you learn in Buffalo University? They teach you when they make this sound, you go left, and you make this sound, you go right, and how to eat like this. But we went to the same university. Now put on the first photograph. Now, we were friends in the same university. This was more than 50 years ago. So, you can see, I don't know if you can recognize him here, but there's how many young men are there? Five, yes. And right in the middle, there is someone who later became His Holiness Gunagrahi Swami. Right in the middle. His name was Bhakta George. Did you see him? Raise your hand if you knew Gunagrahi Maharaj. And do you recognize him? Do you recognize the young man over there right in the middle? Where's the pointer? No, not that one. Up to the right. There. And he was in the band. He was in our university. He was the drummer in the band. And later on, he became the next photo. Someone who you will recognize more than His Holiness Gunagrahi Maharaj. So I knew him for a long time. When we were in the university, we weren't really close friends. And I began chanting a little before him in 1968, and maybe just the next year he started chanting. And one day, I was in New York City with the devotees, and we were chanting on the street. And he had already been chanting some, and he met our Sankirtan party. And at that time, it's hard for me to describe what it was like being a devotee in 1968, in the very early days of the movement. But we had just gotten some mridangas, and we were in the street, and it was maybe 7 o'clock, it was dark, 7 o'clock at night, 8 o'clock at night, and we were chanting, maybe just 10, 11 devotees. And then somehow or another, Bhakta George came. And I was so happy to see him. And I knew he had just started chanting a little bit. And I knew that we have a mridanga here, that we should get him to play the mridanga because he's a drummer. So I told the devotees, please give him the mridanga. He's a drummer. And they said, no, you have to be an initiated devotee before you can play the mridanga. Sometimes we get like that too? Things like that. Anyway, I went, ah. So I wanted to say something to him. So I went over to him, but I didn't know what to say. So I said, please become Krishna conscious. And somehow or another, I mean, that touched him very deeply. And he told me about it 50 years later, that I had done that. And I remembered it also. He didn't tell me the part about the mridanga, and they wouldn't let him play because I didn't let him know that part. But so what happened was, in the university, I began chanting. I graduated from the university, and I used to walk around the university with a shaved head, and like that. And I was the first one in those days at that university to chant. And then after a while, and this was the mood of those days, I left. I was asked to go and preach. Actually, I had the desire to become a university professor at that time. And the devotee Rupanuga Prabhu, he said, no, you should do this instead. So I did that. And then Gunagrai Maharaj, Gunagrai at that time, or George first, and then he started coming around, and then he became very serious, and then he became initiated by Srila Prabhupada. But by that time, I left the United States at the end of 1969. Where were you in 1969? How old are you now? What year were you born? 89. So you're probably some sadhu, dariwala or something. You know, oh, Himalayas. So Prabhupada had asked me to go to Japan. So I left the United States very early in the end of 1969. But Gunagrai Maharaj joined and he became the Sankirtan leader, very powerful devotee. He became the Sankirtan leader in the university. And actually, as I found out later, while he was the Sankirtan leader, they had gone to some music festival and he was distributing books. And he gave the first book that His Holiness Radhanath Swami ever got. Gunagrai Maharaj had given him that book. And Radhanath Maharaj told me later that he had carried that book to Europe and everything. And then he carried the picture of Prabhupada that was in it. And he had Prabhupada in his mind, and then he somehow lost that. So in any case, I went to one part of the world. Then I went to China and I did this. And Gunagrai Maharaj, he did other things and he was preaching in the United States. He went to San Diego and he started the first temple, he became the temple president in San Diego, and he installed the most very wonderful deities there. And then he ended up taking sannyas and traveling all over the United States and preaching and always making devotees, very powerful. Always getting something moving wherever he went. And I was in a different part of the world. So although we were old friends, we never really saw each other or had each other's association or anything like that. I never had his association for so many years. And I would see him sometimes because I lived in Vrindavan, Sri Vrindavan Dham, for 13 years by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. So sometimes I would just see him, we'd talk a little bit, but we really didn't have anything to do with each other. And then, perhaps 4 years ago, or 4.5 years ago, he found out that he had cancer. Now, when it's a funny aspect of our society, that when the devotees who are alive, we may fight with them, we may criticize them and this and that, but when they leave this world, then we only say wonderful things and how nice they are and how wonderful and how powerful it is. So sometimes I think it would be better to have a funeral for people while they're still in the world. And then we could say all the wonderful things about them, that we really think about them, so that they can actually hear our appreciation of them while they're still in the world. That's a good plan, yes? But, so we usually only say the good things about people. But I would like to say something a little bit opposite like that, because it's very, very important for the point that I really want to make. The Gunagrai Maharaj, he wasn't just the perfect person. We tend, when you don't, like you see me one time a year or every two years and you hear a class I give and you think, oh, he's such a wonderful devotee, something like that. But I'm not, actually. So many faults, so many mistakes and things like that. And because the devotees tend to be very kind, especially after we leave this world, so they only see the good. So I would just like to say that although Maharaj was a great devotee, but there was some imperfection there. Now, it's very important to understand this, but the story goes on. So at some point, he tried many, many things to get cured of his cancer. But the cancer kept growing and growing and growing. And then he came to India. He went to South India and he was taking some kind of treatment there, probably in, I don't remember if it was Karnataka or Kerala, I think Kerala. But it was really getting clear that this treatment wasn't working. And this was, he passed away in, I think it was September 19, 2018. So 2 years before that, it was in 2016, it became clear. Now when he came to India, or even maybe even before that, a little before that, he was my old friend. So, and we, our relationship was actually very close. So I began, we began to communicate more or less every day on WhatsApp, just asking him how things are going, something from Shastra, this, that, just trying to support him in any way he can. And actually, until he left this world for 2 years, more or less every day, we were in touch with each other. So at some point, he came, he went to the shelter of Radha Gopinath, and the hospital devotees were trying to take care of him in Chopati. But then it was getting worse. It was getting worse. He had tried many alternative treatments, but he was a very strong person. Very strong person. He was like a general. Very strong. So strong, or everyone, no one really looks forward to dying, generally speaking. So he was always trying to fight it. And he wasn't accepting exactly what some of us were really beginning to perceive, that this was nearing the end, but he wanted to fight it. So after a few weeks under the shelter of Radha Gopinath, he and we all decided that it was time for him to go to Vrindavan. And there, His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj allowed him to use his house in Vrindavan, the ground floor of his house, which was actually donated to him by one very, very special disciple of his named Atta Vigraha, who was a famous painter, artist in South Africa. And she passed away in Vrindavan after a long time. And she also left money with the desire that a hospice, which later turned to be the Bhaktivedanta Hospital in Vrindavan, so that devotees could come to Vrindavan when it was time to leave this world and be cared for in a proper way, because it's a very difficult time, and it takes a lot of special treatment at the times when we're passing away. So I was in Vrindavan for many, many months. So he came to Vrindavan, and then I arrived, and I spent 6 months in Vrindavan. So, and Kartik, every day we'd spend time together. Many devotees were visiting him because he was well known, and he had preached. By this time, he had preached in the United States a lot, and then he had gone to South America, and he was in Argentina, Buenos Aires. And he had built up a whole community of devotees because he was expert. He would always get something going. He could get something going. You know, he would start a temple. He would make it flourish, powerful. And he had such a taste for kirtan. This was his specialty. He had such a taste for kirtan. And interestingly enough, he was the drummer in the band, as we saw, but he wasn't the lead singer. So he would always take the back position and support the kirtan. And then he began playing the conga drums. And And he would always, wherever there were kirtans all over the world, he would go and he would play the drums. He loved kirtans. He had just this natural love for the holy names. Later on, just a few weeks before he left this world, I was able to help him write his final Vyasa Puja offering to Srila Prabhupada. He was in Vrindavan. And he was talking about how immediately, that how before this, while we were in the university, how he was searching for truth. And then as soon as he began to chant the holy names at a Sunday feast, he knew this was it. He immediately connected. Immediately connected. And that his greatest pleasure in his life was getting people to chant Hare Krishna. One way or another, chanting Hare Krishna, especially in kirtan. So, and especially young people, he really loved to get young people and bring them into Krishna consciousness by giving them a taste for the holy names. So anyway, he came to Vrindavan, and His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj very kindly allowed him to stay in his house, and by this time he was starting to get weak from the cancer. And then he immediately started something going in Vrindavan, a kirtan. He called it the Vrindavan Kirtan Sangha. And he had another specialty too, that he loved to distribute prasadam. And his specialty in prasadam was pizza. And he loved to distribute pizza and prasadam. So they started having prasadam every night. They'd have the Vrindavan Kirtan Sangha, and people started coming, 10 people, 20 people, 30 people, and during the busy seasons in Vrindavan, 40 people, 50 people would come. Raise your hand if you ever attended any of the Vrindavan Kirtan Sangha kirtans while in Vrindavan. So there's a few devotees who did. What did you think of them? Very special, okay. Huh? I can't hear. Very absorbed, because he was so focused. And he wouldn't lead most of the time. And great kirtan heroes would come to Vrindavan, and they would come over there and they would lead, and he would sit and play the conga drums. And then he had another instrument called a beltri that he would sometimes play that was very sweet. And then he started doing the Hodel treatment. And the Hodel doctor said that we can cure you. Don't worry, we will cure you. And he was so determined, because that is so austere. So austere. And every half hour, an hour, you have to drink water, and you can eat only a little bit, and then you're drinking so much water. And by the time the summer came around, he was drinking 9 liters a day of water. Now that's a lot of water. And that means you have to drink, and then you can only eat this thing, and then another 20 minutes you have to drink some more and then eat this, and you can only eat very, very little. And he was getting thinner and thinner. And he actually told me, I'm going to show these Western doctors that we can defeat cancer. That was his mood. But it wasn't working. I could tell, because he just kept getting thinner and thinner and thinner. So after Kartik, then the next month passed, and the next month passed, and then I had to leave Vrindavan to continue the rest of my touring duties or the other things that I do. I was writing on the Bhagavatam at that time. But every day I would sit with him and we'd talk about this and that. And because we were... Some of the devotees know, you know, when you're from the same batch, so to speak, you know, you have a similar type of views and everything. So we were talking very, very, very intimately. And he had this, He had so many amazingly wonderful qualities. If some people who we knew wouldn't spend time with him, he never felt, why isn't he coming to see me? There was no malice, no anger, no envy in him at all. It was quite amazing. And he was becoming humbler and humbler and humbler. But he kept on doing this treatment. But he kept on getting thinner and thinner and thinner. And I knew that something that he wasn't ready to recognize yet. And of course, there were many other devotees taking care of him and things like that. And His Holiness Jayadeva Maharaj would speak to him every week on the phone. And he knew too. But Gunagrai Maharaj wasn't ready to accept it. Instead of preparing to leave this world, he was just kept on fighting, and he was so regulated. He was so determined. But the pain was increasing in his body, and then he was only in a wheelchair. And he couldn't, and sometimes he had no energy, he couldn't sleep. Still he was taking the treatments. And he was in a wheelchair, and he could only walk very, very great difficulty with crutches. But every night, at 6:30, when the kirtan would begin, even if he was in tremendous pain, and even if he wasn't, because of all the things, austerities he was performing with the diet and everything, he couldn't wear a dhoti all the time, he was just wearing saffron pants and things. But as soon as the kirtan would begin, despite his pain, it was quite incredible. He'd be lying in bed with no energy, and the kirtan would begin, he'd go, put on tilak, he'd get dressed, and he would go out. And he would play the drums, and he would join the kirtan, and he would say that all the pain goes away during the kirtan. When the kirtan goes on, he would just get, his taste was so strong. But yet, he was getting weaker and weaker. So when I left Vrindavan in the month of April, I guess it was 2018. When I left in March, I was thinking, I may never see him again. And it was starting to get really hot in Vrindavan. And when it gets hot in Vrindavan, fewer and fewer devotees come to Vrindavan to visit, because it goes up to sometimes, the hottest it's ever been that I know of it was 57 at one point. Now that is very hot. Hotter than Pune gets, I think, too. It wasn't that hot then, but every night, every evening at 6:30, the Vrindavan Kirtan Sangha would begin, and Gunagrai Maharaj would somehow or another get wheeled out and put on his, get in proper clothing for that, and he would play the drums as much as he could and lead kirtan, and a few devotees would come, or many devotees would come, but it didn't make a difference. It didn't make a difference. So every day I was in touch with him. I was in Australia. I'd be traveling here and there. We would ask each other questions. We'd talk about this. And he was completely honest with me. Whatever was going on in his mind, good, maybe not perfect, we would just talk about it. He was so open and honest. He wasn't holding anything back at all. And then down and down, but he still wouldn't accept it. Because when you're preparing to live, you have one mood. But when you're preparing to leave this world, it's a different mood. He was still taking all the water and the medicine, because the medicine has mercury in it, so if you have to take the water to wash the mercury, which is poisonous, from the body. But and then at some point, he was so weak, and the few devotees, and the devotees gave him so much shelter too. His Holiness, I'll remember in a moment, which great godbrother of mine. But he sent his disciples to take care of him, because it's one of the most difficult things in the whole world is being a carer for someone in the last time. Because what happens when at the time when you're so disabled like that, your consciousness becomes very compressed, and even the smallest thing is so difficult to do. Even to turn over in the bed becomes such an endeavor, and it takes four people to help you, and you have to ask them to help you, and to pass, and to, you can't, you, to get to the bathroom is a big thing. It's so difficult, and to be a carer, you have to give up any idea that you're the center of everything. Because we usually like to mold our lives and build our lives around our needs. But when you're a carer for someone in this condition, your needs don't mean anything. You have to care for the person. You have to be so unselfish day and night. So there were only two devotees or three devotees taking care of him. One devotee was cooking. And it was very difficult on those devotees. So one kind godbrother sent six of his disciples to help brahmacharis, to help in that situation. And they were so selfless and kind. And so the other devotees, and he had a deity of Giriraj, excuse me, holding up Govardhan Hill, Govardhana Dhari, and he would chant to him. And then at one point, the doctor, the Hodo doctor, said that, well, he said, we've cured your cancer, but you're so weak, we can't do any more. And there was nothing practically left of his body. And at that time, he realized, now I have to shift. I have to prepare to leave. And it was in the month of August, and suddenly, and I was planning to come to Vrindavan in October, in the middle of October, and suddenly I get a WhatsApp message. Brajan, you have to come. I'm all alone. I know, when you get a message like that from a dear friend, oh, what are you going to do? So I stopped what I was doing, and very quickly I got to Vrindavan and I saw him. And by that time, he was already into the palliative care ward of the hospice. And that means that there are nurses who come regularly, and the doctor, kind doctor, Ananta Singha Prabhu, he's checking. You get more care. They administer what you need. But the last thing he wanted to do was leave the room that we had been in for 2 years in Vrindavan and go to there. But when he got there, he realized that I have to stay here now. It was the end. So when I got there, you know, I'd spend hours and hours with him, and His Holiness Ratapaja Maharaj also came just to be with him at this time. And When you live in Vrindavan, you get the honor of being around people when they're leaving this world. But I had never been so close that I was there so much of the time. So I was watching him still go down further and further and further and get thinner and thinner and thinner. So we talk up all the time, and Ratatva Jamaraj and I would talk to him, and you know, is there anything else you have to do in this world? Is there anyone you have to talk to, apologize to? Is there anyone you have to, you really want to thank or anything like that? Is there anything else you have to do? And he had taken care of everything already. He had finished up his service very nicely, put other people in charge. He had communicated with his disciples. He let them know that this was it. Some of them came, some of them were nurses that came to be with him. But I was with him all the time. Now, he only wanted to hear him chant about Krishna. But it is so difficult. It's not, just as Prabhupada says, it's not that, and this is a person whose whole life was dedicated to hearing and chanting about Krishna. But it is so difficult because the pain, and now you have to take this medicine, and now you have to take that medicine, and now you have to do this, and now you have to eat something, and now you have no appetite, now you have to drink some water, and now you have to use the toilet facilities, and now you have, and then it becomes so uncomfortable in your body. And this is one of the symptoms that I've seen by watching quite a few people leave, that you're lying on your side, and it's so uncomfortable. So you ask the people to gently move you, and this time so much of his body had deteriorated, so everything was painful. So they have to be so careful when they move you, and you can only stay in that position for 15, 20 minutes or a half hour before you think, oh, this is uncomfortable, please move me this way. And all you want to do is hear and chant. And really it's hard, between the pain, between the constant medicines and the constant cares, and now the nurse comes in and now this happens, now they have to wash you and it's time to brush your teeth, and now this and that and this and that. It's so difficult to find time. And then the pain is increasing. And although different devotees have left this world in different ways, some of them I've seen have left very, very easily, willingly even, putting themselves in Krishna's hands. I've seen some devotees fighting it to the very end, not wanting to leave, but you can't fight with death, I'll tell you that. When it's time to go, you have to go. And just trying to help him remember Krishna, now keep chanting. Ratatva Jamaraj used to tell him stories about how he joined, and I would tell him this and do this and that. But it was going down and down. And still, the kirtans were going on at night. And soon we'll see a video of some of the different stages of what happened. And he was in a lot of pain by this time. Now, Maharaj had two fears. One was that the pain would be so great that he'd have to take a lot of medication, and that would cover his consciousness, and he wouldn't have the ability to remember Krishna because of his consciousness would be so covered. He was afraid of that. And what do you do when you're in complete pain? You can't win, in one sense. If you can't live without the medications, you can't. It's not like you can just think of Krishna. So much pain. And the other fear he had was being alone. at that time that he wouldn't have the strength. These were the two fears. And then as the time became closer, some of his godbrothers would phone him. Some would visit him and sort of say goodbye and try to encourage him or whatever, or share some old memories of how they preached together and had kirtan together. But it was just coming to September of that month. And then, just like about 4 days before he left, I had a realization. I think it was 4 days, 3 days before he left that because I could see it appeared like he was holding on to something. Because even though everything was so difficult for him, he wasn't leaving. So it appeared that he was holding on to something. And he had told me the story of his life. How he was always a theist. He always believed in the Supreme Lord, but he could never find him. And he would ask his mother, he said, you know, where is God? Where can I find God? Is this cloud God up in the sky? And his mother would say, no, son. Not. And we would all have, we'd have very, very intimate talks. And he told, and it'll come out in a moment. So one day, and actually and at that point, Ratatva Maharaj was there with him and myself. And then about 4 days before he left, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj came. And he left, he was with the Chopati devotees, and I remember he came and he said, I've left my family to come. And because they were having some festival, because it was Gunagrai Maharaj's, because we were spending time together, so he told us that Gunagrai Maharaj had given him his first book at some music festival or something like that. So so Radhanath Maharaj was sitting on one side of him with Ratatva Maharaj. This was early in the morning. And I had this thought of that, something I wanted to tell him, Gunagrai Maharaj. So I came in, and I sat on the other side, and I said, in the morning his consciousness was the clearest. So this was earliest in the morning. And I said, once there was a little boy who was always a theist, and he asked his mother, is this cloud God? And his mother said, no. Can you show me God then? No, my son, I can't. So I started telling him the story of his life and his search, just as he had told it to me on different occasions. And then I said, once when this boy had become a young man, he was the drummer in the band, but he wasn't happy. And then he came to the temple. And soon as he heard the kirtan, he realized that God was in his holy names in the kirtan. And he was listening, just like a little boy, and not saying anything. And then when he met his spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, he found out who God was. And then I repeated to him something that he had told me. I asked him very privately once, what do you have full faith in? Full, unshakable faith in? Because we hear so many things, but where is our real faith that we trust beyond any doubt? So I had asked him that question, and he thought about it. And he said, I have full faith in Srila Prabhupada and the holy names. So when I was talking to him on that morning, I said, now is the time, because you have full faith in Srila Prabhupada and the holy names. You should let go of everything and place yourself in the hands of Srila Prabhupada and Krishna's holy names. And at the end, after telling him the story, he said, thank you so much. His heart was so open and so simple and childlike. So we would talk to him, but always there was, he had to be turned this way and turned that way and turned this way and turned that way. And someone had to brush his teeth for him. And the pain was increasing. And he had to take more medication. And it became very difficult because his consciousness was being covered. And I remembered, this is what he was afraid of. And I kept thinking, how is Krishna going to treat this soul who had given his life and tried so hard, but maybe had some imperfections? How is Krishna going to treat him? And then, after two more days, with Tattva Samaraj there, and the kirtans were still going on, and His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj stayed. He was going to the Ayurveda clinic in Kerala himself, but he kept delaying it to the very last minute because it appeared that Guna Graha Maharaj could leave at any time, any moment. And then the doctor said, it's soon. It's going to happen soon. So we were with him, and all the devotees in the evening came around him. All devotees in Vrindavan, in his room in the hospital, was filled with devotees chanting. And His Holiness Bhakti Bringa Govinda Maharaj was at a festival in Houston. And because Guna Graha Maharaj was the person who first brought him to Krishna consciousness too, he got on a plane immediately and got there on the last day. So he came in, and he was on one side of the bed, and he led kirtan for 6 hours. And then he sat down, and another devotee led kirtan. And it was getting late at night, and the room was filled with devotees. But he was in so much pain. Before that, a few days before that, he had told me, you can't understand how difficult this is. And we can't. We look at the person, but we're not in the pain. You know, we feel sorry for them, this, that. But we can't really know how difficult it is. But one day we'll find out. Each and every one of us, unavoidably. So the night was getting later, another devotee was leading kirtan. And then, then His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj led kirtan for some time, and Guna Graha Maharaj was in so much pain. I've never seen someone in so much pain, and there's not anything you can do. He was in so much pain, they had to put the medication directly into his vein. And I was holding his hand, his arm, And he was going, I hate to do this, but so much pain. And when there was a nurse, devotee Mataji nurse, who was right sitting behind me, and because I was holding his hand. And she said, I think you're hurting him because you must be holding his hand so tight, because he was going. And I said, no, you don't understand. I'm holding him very gently. And I showed her his nail marks in my arm where he was just in so much pain. So they had to increase double the medication again. And this is what he was afraid of. And they gave him so much medication because he couldn't, that his eyes went back and his mouth went open. He was in a coma, the doctor said. And this is just what he was afraid of. And they placed this sensor on his foot first and then on his hand. And it was connected to a screen. And the screen was showing his life symptoms, going like this. And we're all watching him. And it goes like this. And then it goes like this. And then it goes like this. And he's like this. And I had seen people like that before. And the doctor said it. They're in a coma. And his life symptoms are going like this and like that and like this. And the doctor is saying, it's going to happen any minute. And one of the most strange things was going on, because this is the age of Facebook and the internet. Devotees were holding mobile phones. And his death was being broadcast on Facebook all over the world. On one level, this is so peculiar, so odd. On the other level, it was amazing for the reason I'll tell you in a moment. And devotees who couldn't be there, his disciples and friends, they were saying their last prayers to him, giving their last humble thanks, but he was in a coma. I was watching some devotees as I was holding the phone for one, tears are coming from their eyes, and they're watching him at this last time. And then the doctor said, any minute now it could happen. And Govindamaj got up, and I thought, because it was already 2 a.m, I thought maybe he's going to go home, go to sleep or something. But no, he got right next to Guna Gramaj's ear. I'm holding one of his arms. Another devotee is standing by him. And Govindamaj starts chanting really loudly into his ear. Sometimes he's chanting, Radhe Sham, Radhe Sham. But mostly he's chanting the Hare Krishna mantra so loud in his ears. And Guna Gramaj is in a coma. And then suddenly, while this is being broadcast to thousands and thousands of devotees, live streamed on Facebook, Guna Gramaj, in his coma, starts chanting. Clearly, his mouth is moving. With Guna Gramaj's chanting, his mouth starts moving. The doctor was amazed. We were amazed because his eyes were back, his mouth was, and you'll see it. You won't see his mouth moving, but we all saw it. And the kirtan went on and on, louder and louder. Govindamaj is chanting and chanting in his ear. And we're all chanting, we're dancing, the devotees are all gathering around. And then the screen goes, boom. And it was over. The doctor came, put the stethoscope to his chest, and said, Katamokya, he's gone. And the whole atmosphere during this kirtan, we were in Vrindavan. The whole atmosphere, and this, it was just at the Brahma Muhurta time had begun. And the whole atmosphere and everyone experienced it was like the spiritual world had opened up. And then the next day he was placed in samadhi in Vrindavan. And the whole world, not the whole world, but thousands and thousands and thousands of people were watching this, him chanting the holy names in a coma. And the doctor, months later, I asked the doctor, do you remember this that night? And he said, I'll remember it for to the last day of my life. So the question was, if you're not Dhruva Maharaj, excuse me, Narada Muni, and maybe there's some mistake, some fault, maybe every bit and crevice of your heart hasn't been fully cleansed, and the question is, but you've tried your best and served in the preaching movement of Prabhupada, of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the question is, how will Krishna treat such a soul? And here was the answer. He took care of him. He had to go through such difficulty perhaps, but Krishna took such care of him and sent him home, brought him home to his own home. There were three, at the end of the, I said there are three more, two more things. There was TOB and NOM. And it was, we should try our best. And NOM? NOM? We are needing of mercy. We try our best, and ultimately we need mercy. And if we've tried our best and preached and given everything, that mercy will be there. Everyone's faith in this principle was really increased because it was undoubtable. And everyone, oddly enough, peculiar as it was, the most intimate time when you're leaving this world was broadcast and everyone saw it. So that's what I wanted to tell you, that we should really try our best and know that we need mercy. We should really try our best to preach in Prabhupada's wonderful preaching movement. And you'll be protected. That's what I would like to say. And look how it was. He was in Vrindavan. He had his own house in Vrindavan by the mercy of his god brothers. He was staying in a hospital where there were devotees taking care of him by the mercy of his god brothers, by the mercy of Prabhupada, by the mercy of the Dham, by the mercy of the deities, by the mercy of community of devotees. Okay. Thank you very much. And that ends the seminar. But we have just a few more moments of questions. If anyone has any questions, I saw you have one there. But since that wasn't directly about this last class, I'll just see if anyone does before looking at that one, if that's all right. Yes.
Which is very grateful you shared so deeply the
the video. And there's sound attached to it, so we need the sound. Oh, sound voila. This is, this is Vrindavan Kirtan Sangha.
Maharaj is walking. He couldn't walk anymore.
Deteriorating more. This is in the palliative care ward of the hospital. Rhythm is still perfect. Cared for him. He served Prabhupada in Prabhupada's movement, and the movement cared for him and brought him home. Okay, yes. Yes, Prabhu, you had a question.
I'm very grateful you shared this pastime of Gurungarai Maharaj. I wanted to understand, we are trying to serve in our Hare Krishna movement, and there is always more opportunities to serve.
Yes.
And there is always, in fact, it's kind of emergency all the time to how we can do more and more. But there's always a need for also taking in, and also, as you mentioned, that he was wanting to fight for going on and on for service of Prabhupada. And there can be a mood of, now I have to leave. So, does this call come by the will of the Lord and the Vaishnava that now we should prepare for the next stage, or do we prepare as an ongoing servant towards that kind of a...
If I understood your question correctly, you're asking, should we just be always caught up in the emergency things that I have to do this now, and neglect nourishing ourselves and our own Krishna consciousness?
No, we nourish ourselves in Krishna consciousness. That way we do. Means the mood of nourishment can have, it's like the ongoing service to Prabhupada in the world versus, as you were sharing, like for example, Krishnan Prabhu, when he comes, he regularly shares that we should always remember holy name and death. So usually when we are in active state of service and we are not unhealthy also, so to just say that we are actually towards death is not so easy, although we know the temporary nature of life.
Yes. So no one wants to go, and we try to push this thought from our mind as much as we practically can.
So do we at certain stage mature up to understand that I have to go, or do we actually are like all the time we should be preparing that I can go anymore? Because the detachment from the active state of service, that's very difficult to attain, because say tomorrow I have to do something. So I have to plan, and that anxiety remains.
Although we can leave at any moment, we don't live our life like we're going to die tomorrow. Because you can't make any plan for anything in that way of preaching. But this, I will have to say, came very naturally when he accepted it. So especially if we're young and we still have energy left and there's no disease or anything like that. Of course, you know, a brick can fall from the sky right on our head and we could leave at any moment, but you can't live like that. So we live a practical, normal life, and we try to develop by hearing and chanting and serving, develop that serving mood, develop like Dhruva Maharaj did by the constant chanting as much as we practically can. But then at some time, like it happened to Maharaj Prickett, it happened to Guna Grahi Maharaj, it happens to many, many souls, that they get a notice. You know, we tend to think that tomorrow is just going to be like today. We tend to think like that, and it will just go on and on and on forever. But one day, we go to the doctor, and he tells us, guess what? So at that time, we should prepare in a direct, focused way, as did Maharaj Prickett. What Prabhupada did, he finished off his whatever duties he had towards the Krishna consciousness movement, his will, and then he said, now I can go peacefully, that all I've done in service will be maintained. So I think there has to be some common sense and balance in this. I'm not sure if I answered your question.
Yes.
And if we just, they say if we're young and we have so much energy, and if we just stop what we're doing and just, I'm going to hear and chant and everything like that, then we'll probably not be able to do it either. We should use whatever energy and passion we have in Krishna's service. Yes.
In the same regard, one more aspect comes is, as we are doing service with devotees, there are things that we may do which may hurt other devotees, which we do not want to, but it may hurt, and we may be immature and that may have hurt, or we may be doing the will as per superiors or something, and then it is apparently hurting. Like Srila Prabhupada, when he was trying to do the will of Srila Bhakti Thakur, at the end he was seeking forgiveness from his god brothers, and god brothers said, no, you are actually Mahapatit Pavan, while Prabhupada was saying, I am Mahapatit. So there is a sense of seeking forgiveness at the end. Now,
Prabhupada also instituted saying every day, Vanchakalpa Turubhyastha Kripasa. And the reason for that is the one difficult thing about being in the association of devotees is that we take each other for granted very easily and we offend each other. So the purpose of him doing that was so that the asking for forgiveness, but because we do it every day, it just becomes another mechanical thing that we do. But the purpose behind it was to ask for forgiveness. If I've offended you, knowing if I've insulted you, if I've neglected you, please excuse me for that. You know, recently I went to a Christian monastery in Australia, and I saw some of their rules that they had for the monks living in the monastery. And one is, settle all arguments and disagreements before the sun goes down. I like that one. Because as the days go on, the problems, the anger, the being offended, it goes deeper inside and it gets covered over superficially, but it still remains there. And I've also seen that that things that things of people have told me, do you remember 30 years ago you did this and this and this to me? Or something like that. And I don't remember, but they remember. And people can say things to you that we forget on one level, but at a different time, we see how much they're still within us, the pain of that. So we should be quite careful as we deal with each other. We should be careful as how we deal with each other. Intentionally, unintentionally, in the course of our duty. And one rule is, especially for those who are managing, it's so hard because you have to correct, you have to say, don't do this, now everyone has to do this and this and this and this according to the needs of the time. So one rule, and that is that before you have to correct someone, you wait till there is some affection in your heart. So that when you do correct, it's done without the anger and the envy that may some at a different time be present. So you wait till you have some appreciation and affection, some pretty in the heart, and then in that mood you can speak. And Srila Prabhupada, it's written in Prabhupada Lilamrita that he said, his father used to approach him even and say, my dear son, please excuse me, but it's my duty to say something now. So we should be respectful and careful as much as we practically can. This is an ideal thing, and you know, life is so often not ideal, but we should always keep the ideal in mind. Did that answer? I don't know if I answered your question. I will read this, but first, any brahmachari who has a question, I'm going to answer it.
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, very, very grateful for sharing such intimate dealing with your god brothers. Yesterday with Shamsundar Prabhu and today with one. So thank you so much for that. It was extremely inspiring, enlightening and heart-touching. Regarding the question which I have, it's about yesterday, about you were speaking about the taste which is coming from Golok Vrindavan, and
you saw a person, even in those little videos, who had a taste in kirtan, even lying practically on his, in the palliative care, he's raising his hand. It's a gift. Taste is a gift. Don't take it lightly. It's a gift. When someone gives you a valuable gift, you have to make sure you cherish it and care for it. Yes, go ahead.
So, and as you said that there are different tastes, deities, hearing, Srimad Bhagavatam, or, and so on, so many other things. So, and towards the end you are saying that, there is an expansion, but most important thing to be kept is the essence. Essence has to be kept. Yesterday, towards the end of the, not in the class, but in the personal talks. So, my question is, even Prabhupada times, there were questions asked about how many temples, how many books, how many devotees, which are kind of appear to be fruits. So, there is a chance of taste, fruits of the action.
Yeah. Yes.
So, and Prabhupada wanted that, and now also he wants it, there is no doubt about it. But my question is, Prabhuji, that because pure devotion has nothing to do with thinking about the fruits. At the same time, as an institution, we have targets and all. So, how to remain focused while, trying to practice pure devotional service? Because this taste of success and all these things, we talk about it, but then the taste buds change, actually. The whole taste is about fruits only. So, how do we focus on right? We have got right taste.
Well, Prabhupada said that the proof of a pure devotee is how many temples he's opened. He said that too, how many books he's distributed and things like that. But those are springing from service, a serving mood. So we should really try to make a serving mood. Like Prabhupada was incredibly ambitious. I don't know. He once told myself and Jagatwini Mataji, it is my desire that everyone in the universe becomes Krishna conscious. Now, how you can't get more ambitious than that. Not even the world, but the universe. So, but it's springing not from I want to be number one, but I want to serve the number one. So we should check that we're always in the mood of a servant. Who are we trying to please by this? Who are we trying to please? Who are we really trying to please? What mixtures are there in our consciousness? So we should be introspective also. Do you ask yourself that? Who am I really trying to please? And then there's an answer comes out, and then you have to say it again. Who are you really trying to please? So we should be introspective, but we should keep going anyway. Not, I have so many faults and I'm materialistic and proud, so therefore I should stop. No, we should become humble when we realize our faults. But we have to keep going. There's no benefit in getting off the train. You will never get to the destination until you get back on. So when you find out even that you really don't have the proper ticket, you have to still stay on and be humble. Yes, now I will read this for our Prabhu. Yesterday you quoted one incident in the life of great Narada Muni. He left mother unattended when the snake bit her and she died. After this incident, he meditated. Lord Krishna appeared and he got completely absorbed. He cared nothing else other than Lord Krishna. Another story which I heard about Bhakta Pundalik was that when Lord Vital came to see him, he continued serving his old parents. Through a brick on which Lord Vital is still standing in a holy place of Pandrapur, several bhaktas visit through Pariyatra. Who a common man like me, not a great devotee, should follow? Great Narada Muni or great Bhakta Pundalik? Now, when you go to a medicine store, there are so many varieties of medicines on the shelves. So which one do you take? Yes, you have to find someone who can prescribe for you according to your capacity and who will move you forward into the good health of your soul. Now, for that person, you have to trust him. He has to know all the medicines. And if a doctor just has read one book and he prescribes you, Prabhupada told the story about that, how once there was a veterinarian and he had an assistant. You know the story? And a man came with a horse, and the horse had a big lump in his throat. And this very expert veterinarian took a hammer, and went, and the horse went, and he was cured, and he walked away. And then he left his assistant in charge for a few minutes, and then he had to do something, so he went away. And amazingly enough, a man came with a horse with a big lump in his throat. And the assistant said, "I know how to deal with this." And he took a hammer and he banged the lump, and the horse died. And then the master veterinarian came back and he said, What happened? He said, "But I did the same thing as you." And the master said, "You fool. That first horse had swallowed an apple, and the second had a tumor." All you people who are laughing are obviously not horses. But in other words, if you know a little bit, you could be very dangerous if you just apply that one point to every circumstance. So someone who you can trust will have knowledge of the whole process, different stages and things like that. So do you have some person that you can trust? No. You should see if you can find someone to trust who will prescribe for you according to your capacity. And you don't have to be afraid. He's going to say, "Shave your head and move immediately into the brahmachari ashram and put on saffron." In the old days, we used to do that. But now I think we are more mature. So I think devotees... See, when I first started chanting, I was 21 years old. And I was one of the oldest devotees in the movement. So you can imagine the kind of advice we gave. It was not very balanced and not mature. So now, but Prabhupada was there, and he, as some devotees said, he was the only adult in the movement. But we had all this knowledge, but no wisdom. But now the times are very different. That the devotees have been through life. You know, finally there's a society with elders and everything in between. So, without knowing you or your situation, that you can't go wrong if you chant Hare Krishna as much as you practically can. I don't think anyone would ask you to renounce everything at this point in your life. But yet, you should know that the hourglass of your life, the sand, is coming through. How old are you now? Yes. So you can take your own thoughts and present it to some senior devotee and see what they say. But because you are such a sincere soul, I'm sure that if you don't have anyone that you can find, you pray to Prabhupada, you pray to Radha Vrindavan Chandra, you pray to Nityananda Gaur, that please, if you could put me in touch with one of your servants who can guide me, That would be so kind of you. Mr. Damodar, our dear friend Damodar. Same Damodar. Yes. So has he told you to shave your head? No one tells me to shave my head either, because it doesn't make any difference anymore. Are you still working? Oh yes, we met that day. Yes. Do you chant every day on beats? You are obviously very close friends. Okay. But you're old enough to also be his close friend? Are you chanting also? Okay. Do you feel happy now? Good. And what is your good name? Nikhil. And your good name, sir?
Digambar.
Wonderful. I don't know if I've answered your question. Good team. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much for both of the seminars. It was really a great experience. Yesterday, at the beginning of lecture, you said that Krishna's pleasure is to serve his devotees. Can you tell us how Krishna serves his devotees?
Should I tell you? Is that what you're asking me?
Yes.
On the highest level, there was once two devotees who were trapped in the body of trees. This isn't even the highest level. And Krishna thought, my devotee Narada has blessed them in such a way that it appears to be a curse, but they have viewed my pastimes for years. And now it is the time to release them. So he took the grinding mortar and pulled it between the two trees, and the two trees fell down. And these two shining persons came out and prayed to Krishna. So he was serving three devotees there at the same time. Four devotees. He was serving Narada Muni. The Lord's mercy follows his devotee's mercy. He was serving those two, Nalakuvara and Manigriva, and he was serving Yashoda Maya also. Because when he pulled the trees, the rope between the trees, these huge trees broke, but the rope didn't break, because it was tied with the love of Mother Yashoda. So much rasa happens before that and after that in this Damodar Lila. So in Vrindavan, Krishna serves the ecstasies of the devotees. He increases their ecstasies by his actions, how he acts, how he steals butter. And he's so naughty, And he plays his flute and attracts the gopis, and he attracts the cows, and he pats them. Sometimes he even massages the legs of the calves, and he puts his head to the head of the calves, the young calves, and he says things like, "Do you miss your mother? Don't worry, we'll bring you to her very soon." And when the cows wander away, he calls them by their name, and how sweet they sweetly respond to Krishna's voice. So that's how he serves that level of devotees. For the Ordinary souls of this world who are not devotees, even he serves them. He gives them the air that they breathe. He gives them the water that they drink. He makes their heart beat. He tells them from inside, this is not good, don't do this. And they say, go away. He says, you'll get in trouble. They say, I don't care. And he says, you will later. He serves them by his devotees who preach to them, who chant the holy names so that they hear them. He serves them in thousands of ways. He distributes prasadam to them. He tries to make them religious and spiritually inclined in that way. And then also to the devotees who are not yet mature, he gives them guidance and association that can make them more mature. He, through that guidance and association, he tells them how to deal with life in a way that they'll move closer to Krishna instead of going the opposite direction. He lets us see the lives of exemplars. He also advises us through Shastra. And also, because of the verse Tateyanu Kampam Susamikshamano, he trains us how to see Krishna's mercy in everything. So many ways. He brings us to Vrindavan and places us by Govardhan Hill and has us chant Hare Krishna. So that we can just get a glimpse of, just a glimpse maybe, of what it's like in the spiritual world. Just get a glimpse of the taste. He comes in the form of the deities. He comes in the form of the holy names and says, any time you want to be with me, I am there. Just take me. Just say my names. So in so many ways, that's Krishna's kindness. Did that answer your question, sort of? Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
Very nice.
Maybe this is the last question, or the next to last. Yes.
Prabhuji, thank you very much. It's always enlivening to hear from you and get so much clarity in our understanding. Prabhuji, my question is, you mentioned that Krishna takes care of someone who has dedicated his life for serving the mission and serving him.
Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dvesho. He takes care of everyone, but he takes care of them equally. But he takes care of his devotees. Mayatateshu chapyaham.
So my question is, if somebody is like working outside and living in a family life, is that can be considered as a service? Does Krishna see it as a service? Or
if he's just taking care of his family and it has nothing to do with Krishna, then of course it's not service, he's just taking care of his family. But what we want to do is lead an undivided life. What I mean by that is we not think that this work is for me and this family is for me and this is for Krishna. We want to combine in our consciousness all the different parts of our life so that everything is being done for Krishna. So how could we work in the world and take care of our family in such a way that it's service to Krishna? That is more or less the question that you're asking. So there are many household of devotees who do this. See, the way I see it is that there's someone who, by fortune or by previous life's sanskaras, that they have, like Jad Bharat, he was just so determined, nothing is going to get in my way. I'm going straight to Krishna. And there are others who take a more humble way and they don't have that ability, so they go like this a little bit. And there are others who go like this. And there are others who go like this a little bit. And there are others who maybe even go like this. And they're all okay. Our basic preaching is that everyone should use their life responsibly. And we don't want people to go like this away from Krishna. So exactly how to do that, exactly how to live your life in such a way that it is not divided, so that you can use your, so that you can progress further and more quickly take some good, experienced counseling, mentoring. But yes, we should do that. I mean, the simplest example is when you have a, do you have a job now? Okay. Do they pay you in your job? Do you take all that money and every cent of it do you use for your family? Huh? Okay. But the rule that I would like to say is whenever money passes through your hand, at least something you should give for Krishna, at least something. There are devotees who are so exemplar and so trust Krishna, they give everything to Krishna. Prabhupada told of one of his god brothers that did this, and then they gave everything to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and said, whatever you give me for your for my maintenance, I'll take. He wouldn't have to beg or anything like that. The wife would come and take everything, whatever. So that's perhaps on a different level, but that was that devotee's realization. So whenever money comes into hand, don't take the mood, this is my own personal advice, that first I'll get a large amount of money and then I'll give something to Krishna. Don't take that mood. Whenever money comes into your hand, you should give something to Krishna. Because you'll find otherwise that how much money does it take before you feel secure? I mean, how much money? There's no end. There's no end. So at least do some service with whatever, every time, and also some time. One time in Hong Kong, one young man came to Prabhupada who had a good job, and he was a Chinese boy who was chanting, educated and everything. And he said to Prabhupada, we Chinese tend to be very attached to our families. And I was thinking Prabhupada was going to say, that's all right, just, you know, whatever position you're in, you know, just you can use it in Krishna service. But instead Prabhupada said, that's natural. Even dogs and cats are attached to their families. He was very strong with him, and this person could digest it. So we want to keep in mind that what we want is to develop our attachment to Krishna. Okay. Oh, Prabhu, abhi nobody, ektam nobody, kya karo? Is it a simple question that I can answer yes or no to? Huh? Huh? Okay, then this is the last one, though, because then I will go. And I'm so simple, I believe you. Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu, you were telling yesterday that, not yesterday, I mean one of your class, you were telling that we have to catch from the very beginning the seed of pure devotional service. Seed. Maybe it may be little, very less.
When I say have to, I don't mean you have to, means but we should, it's in your fortune.
Yeah, it's in our fortune, yeah. So, in our spiritual journey, in our spiritual journey when we are going on, so that time, at times maybe in the beginning, because of maybe our innocence, and because we actually, because of externals also, we may not be so much grown up as a devotee, at least you are not seen as that. So maybe that innocence, that internal work seems to be more, you know, it is more intense, internal work. Means sometimes I perceive like that. And say we grow in the society, so we tend to identify in terms of certain, maybe sometimes bodily identification, maybe gross or subtle, different ways. So there is a fear which comes that in terms of that, we should not lose that core aspiration of pure devotional service like that. Yeah. Because one should not get caught up in anything like that. And as we read in the pages of Bhagavatam also, or otherwise also, that there have been always cases where very stalwart devotees also tends to sometimes get caught up here and there. So how as a sadhaka, we should have an healthy fear, at the same time full confidence to go on and, I mean, that...
And patience.
Yeah, patience.
And enthusiasm.
Yeah. That, and the core aspiration for that pure devotional service, that never we lose, and the internal work goes on intensifying more and more. So how?
Okay. But I'm going just to make this really exciting.
Good drama, yes? Okay, good night. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. We are really very fortunate, very privileged. Somehow, by inconceivable great fortune, we have His Grace Purujan Prabhu, who gave us two beautiful seminars on japa and learning from the Bhagavatam characters like Sri Narada Muniji on the principles of bhakti. And Prabhuji's consciousness, actually, Prabhu just doesn't speak information. His realizations help us to come closer to the truth and help us in our own journey to become a better soul for Srila Prabhupada's service and purifying our hearts. It is inconceivable great fortune that we got so much of His time and association. Prabhuji's sweetness also pervades every discussion, and that makes us understand Vaishnav character and how we should actually live a better Vaishnav life. It's a great fortune. Let us thank His Grace Purujan Prabhu and also request Him, He can bless us every year, as many times as possible, by coming here and making these wonderful seminars happen for us. We'd like to thank Him by three times loudly chanting, Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Hari Bol! We also thank His disciples, Damodar Prabhu and His good wife, Vrindavani Shri Mataji. It is their kindness that actually somehow we have the fortune of having Prabhu here. The whole family takes care of Prabhuji very nicely, and they actually are making us blessed with Prabhuji's association. Really thankful for them. Books are there of Prabhuji. If devotees wish to take, please see.